back to Idaho. This is Zillennial Canon. I'm Kira.
And I'm Adam. And a little bit of a little hiatus, just a little 2-week hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
I love when me and Kira both get busy in respective weeks, but then that blends into the same 2-week section.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns into a hiatus. Just in like a little mini hiatus.
Yeah. Listen, we'll spin it into like, I was mad at you because you didn't like Argyle and we got into a fight. And then we both had to recover from Madame Web, even though I liked it. And we haven't had a discussion about Madame Web.
Oh, you like Madame Web?
Yeah. So I guess we're going to go on another month hiatus now that you know that I liked Madame Web.
Well, I'm glad somebody liked it, you know?
Yeah. I'm taking one for the team.
You know, in many ways, Madame Web is a lot like Napoleon Dynamite because... a lot of nothing happens in both movies, so that's always fun. I feel like this one, we're coming back strong, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we're coming back with a classic, with a Zillennial bona fide classic. This is one for the books. I've been wanting to cover this for a while too. It's been on my mind for like at least the past year. But for some reason, I've just never pulled it as my choice.
It's the 20th anniversary.
So the thing that really set this in motion, and honestly, if you ask me why I didn't do it, I don't have a good answer for you. I think I just forgot. But John Hader, and honestly, I'm sorry, I'm not just going to look it up right now. But like the guy who plays Uncle Rico and the guy who plays Pedro, they were all on tour with the 20th anniversary of this movie doing screenings and like a Q&A, and they were just in Orlando like a week or two ago. Why I didn't go, again, I think it's just a memory thing. I just forgot. There's too much happening right now. I'm too busy. But I know a friend of the pod, Hunter and Drew, they went and they said it was incredible. Apparently like John Hader like rode a motorbike through the aisle and he like jumped on stage with it or something. So apparently they put on like a whole show for the audience and then they did like a screening of the film. But honestly, like hearing Hunter tell me about that, I was like, oh shit. I'm like, I think I want to cover Napoleon Dynamite on the pod because I want to watch it again. And yeah, you said something, I forgot what you said in your Letterboxd thing about like Comedy Central or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was on repeat.
Mm-hmm.
As a youth.
Yeah, this was definitely one where I would come home from school in like middle school or high school, like early high school, probably more middle school. Mm-hmm. And it would usually be on TV on Comedy Central. And I would make myself a bowl of cereal and sit down and watch it before I started my homework.
Yeah, I had a pretty early history with this movie, weirdly. And, you know, a talking point that I wanted to bring up about this was that I think for a lot of us Zillennials, it was, for a lot of people, our first, like, indie movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was a Sundance acquisition. This was a movie that was weirdly bought by Fox Searchlight and Paramount Pictures and MTV Films in a joint distribution deal. And they released it like in the heat of the summer after premiering at Sundance. This is like one of the biggest like high profile Sundance movies of all time. One would argue it maybe is like probably the, like, I mean, to hit the mainstream, I mean, maybe the biggest one they've ever done. I don't have the, you know, like list pulled up in front of me, but like, this is like an insanely popular movie that like still is like in the cultural like zeitgeist, like to this mm-hmm. day. And the fact that it just like started as like a Sundance premiere, I think that's like honestly crazy in retrospect, considering how much of like a comedy classic it is. Like, it's still talked about along the lines of like a, like Anchorman or like a Judd Apatow comedy, you know, like it's on those like discussions. I saw this movie for the first time. I don't know what age I saw it at. I think it was like the year it came out, like later that year, maybe 2005. So maybe like a year after. But I remember I rented it from Hollywood Video at the time. And I had like a very weird taste in movies back then, because I would, you know, I would go see all the usual family fare, and enjoy that. I would enjoy the comic book movies, but then I would always find like something along the lines of this that I'd also gravitate towards. And yeah, there's just something about this movie, I think, with a lot of people around that time, where there's something, even at a young age, I just like loved something about it, even though I couldn't articulate that I liked the direction and that I liked the art style, I liked the music. Like, I don't think I could comprehend why I liked it, but I did, you know? And yeah, it became like a movie that, like, I know the first time I watched it, I loved it. So I eventually, I think my mom, I don't have any like distinct memories of this, but I remember my mom had to, I guess, have bought it for me, because this became, like you said, it was like after school movie for me, because I remember like the opening credits made me hungry after school. So I have like so many like memories of like eating like microwave nachos while watching this movie, because the opening, like one of the opening title cards is like the nacho plate. It makes me want enchiladas. It makes me want like microwave burritos. Like, this movie makes me want all those things. So yeah, I mean, it's a movie I've seen like, I want to say at least 20 times. Like, I've seen this movie so many times in my life. Not always in order, not always in its entirety, but it's something I know every line of. And as I was watching it, it really does kind of feel like you're watching like a, you're seeing an old friend or something. Like, it's something that feels very familiar and timeless, even. Yeah, I love this movie. It holds up perfectly.
Yeah, what you were saying about, like, the opening credits, I feel like that's just, like, such a good, like, I love the opening credits so much. There's literally an entire section on its Wikipedia page dedicated to just the opening credits. It, like, sets it up so well of just, like, I feel like even if it's somebody's like first time watching it, like, it just feels like familiar. Like, there's just something so cozy about it, and I feel like a lot of like the production design like lends itself to that, like even just like his grandma's like cursive handwriting on like a piece of lined paper just like attached to the fridge. I'm like, why does that feel like, I don't know, like it is truly an independent film. Like, it feels like so real and not overproduced.
Was there a budget section on here? Because I can't. $400,000, not even $1 million for this. That's crazy. That's really crazy. And it went on to make $46.1 million. That's like, in return of investment, that's fucking nuts. And you know, it honestly, for like a film with that low of a budget, it looks great. Like, the color palette of the movie, like the but also like you know what you're saying, like the just the use of like kind of ambiance, like the feel, like there's such like a texture to it, like you can almost like feel it, like it feels so lived in. Like, there's no none of it feels like a set. No part of it feels like a prop. Like, it all feels like this is something, like, they probably have, like, a Walmart 30 minutes away from them. Or, like, they just go to that local, like, you know, town used drugstore or something. Like, all these, it just, I don't know, it just feels so natural. And that's part of the charm of it. And none of it even feels like, of course, these are great performances, but they don't even feel like performances. Like, it really does feel like you're watching, like, just a bunch of weirdos, like, doing their thing. John Heder in this movie, he's just, like, I mean, he's on another level. He, like, this is, like, insane for a first, I think, first performance. Like, the fact that he did this early in his career is honestly, like, astounding to me.
I don't think I've ever seen him in anything else.
Did you ever see that movie, The Benchwarmers, with him and David Spade?
No, but I'm familiar with it.
He plays, like, the weird guy in that movie.
And
I saw that. I'm sure I've seen him in, like, other stuff, but I can't, like, definitely nothing at this level at all. Like, never. And he's been very open about, like, the fact that he's very appreciative of, like, this movie and, like, how he kind of doesn't have to do like a whole lot anymore just because of this movie alone. But he is also like very passionate about this movie. Like I was reading like the sequel section and he's like very adamant about like he wants to do like a sequel, but not just like for the sake of doing a sequel. Like he wants to do, like a dark like follow up, like to like kind of, because like this movie does like a, I mean, it is like very comforting. It is very like minimalist and I like the aesthetic of it and I like the feel of it. But on the undertone of it, like there is like a kind of like sadness, almost like a Wim Wenders movie or something about like like lower class America, like just like the broken dreams of America and like how, like especially like honestly Uncle Rico's like story is like, if you break down like the bare bones of it, it's really depressing. Like a guy who was just so sad with his life that he got a divorce because she was trying to point out that he was living in the past and he didn't want to hear that. And he goes on to try to buy a time machine so he can go back to his glory days of like high school football. Like it's really sad stuff. Yeah. You know, but then, I mean, also the movie doesn't really like, belittle any of its characters either. Like at first, like everything with like, you know, Kep and like his girlfriend online, like it's played for a joke, but then that turns into be like a very genuine relationship.
Yeah.
Like there's so many like elements of that that I love that are like subversive and that it is played for a joke, but then it turns into something like actually nice.
Yeah. This movie is very kind to all of its characters.
It really is. Yeah.
Like, nobody's ever really, like, the butt of a joke. Like, if they are, then, like literally in the end, like, it's, like, the whole school stands up and applauds for him dancing.
Yeah.
Like, everybody. Yeah. Like, it's, like, nobody's ever, like, the butt of the joke. Like, it's just, yeah, I feel like it's really interesting how, like, this is considered essentially a cult classic, because I feel like it's widely loved by every single person. Like, I don't think I know anybody who hasn't seen this movie. I feel like,
yeah,
like when we were children too, like I feel like it's not really like a cult movie.
Am I wrong?
I don't know.
It was kind of like one of those weird movies that like It hit the middle school, elementary school playgrounds. You know what I mean? Like, I had a Vote for Pedro shirt when I was a kid.
Me too.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it definitely hit the mainstream. I mean, dude, like, Halloween, like, that year, like, forget about it. The amount of Napoleon Dynamites I saw that year, like, 2004, 2005, even 2006 and 7, like, for many years after. It was kind of like the Joker, like, Heath Ledger and Napoleon Dynamite. Like, those were, like, the two biggest I saw throughout
my job. In third grade, we had, because my teacher did not give a fuck, like, rest in peace to her, but she was, I found out recently she passed away, she was an awful teacher, just let us do whatever we wanted.
Right.
I spent the entire class like watching music videos on Yahoo Music or whatever.
Oh yeah.
We had a class election and it was Pedro versus Fred Burger.
What is that from again?
It's from a cartoon. I don't remember which. I think it's from... Is it from Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends? Fred Burger is from... Oh, Billy and Mandy.
Billy... Oh, right.
So, it was Pedro versus Fred Burger. And we had a dead serious class election in third grade about it. In 2005, 2006.
Well, like, I don't know. Like, to tell you how much it hit the mainstream, I remember, like, Epic Movie or Date Movie or whichever one came out after this movie, like, they had a Napoleon Dynamite segment in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know you've made it when those fuckers do something. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, like, really, honestly, crazy. Because, especially like when you actually watch it, I mean, it's a great movie. And I love that it caught on. But it is, like, very deliberately paced. And it is, like, very, like, hyper-specific. Like, it doesn't compromise. It doesn't feel like. It doesn't feel like a studio production. And typically, these aren't the kind of movies that, like, break out. You know? It doesn't feel like a wide-release type beat. But the movie was fully wide-released. I never saw it in theaters, but I do remember, I think, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, what sparked my interest in seeing it was going to the theater at some point. Maybe it was like, let's say Spider-Man 2, because that was coming out that summer. I probably saw it like when I was seeing Garfield or Spider-Man 2 or something that summer, and I saw like the poster, or I walked by the theater for it or something. Maybe it's like an in-lobby trailer, and I was just like, what is this? Like, what? Mm-hmm. What is this? I also have like a weird draw to like MTV films as a kid, so that had a lot of heavy lifting. But yeah, but then again, you watch it and like every line is so iconic, like just like instantly. Like it, this movie has like no dead air. Like it does have like slower moments, and it does like build up to those jokes, but there's never a moment that you could say is wasted. Like, yeah, it's all so perfect from the moment it starts.
And it's very, like, slice of life, because it's, like, there's, like, not really, like, a plot. Like, the most simple plot lines is just, like, he makes a friend, and he's like, I want to run for president.
Yeah.
And then they both have crushes on girls, but it's not really, like, a plot. Yeah. And it's just, like, little scenes of, like, just monotony. Like, it's like, oh, I ordered this time machine online, like, or oh, I guess I'll learn how to dance, or like, you know what I mean, like
it's like little vignettes,
like, exactly,
generally.
I
feel like a lot of comedies sometimes have this like vibe to them, but this is like on another level where it truly does not, I mean, like you said, have a plot. It just is very comfortable in the idea that it is just trying to achieve, like, I mean, like you said, the slice of life of it all. Like, it's very content in that, which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. And also, it's just like super fucking funny, because like right when you feel like they may be overplaying like one segment of the film too much, like whether it's like Napoleon and Kip's relationship, or it plays a little too much with like jokes with Pedro, like it introduces like another segment of the film, like him going to like work on that fucking like farm, and like having to like pluck the, he's like, the fucking talon joke is so funny, because he's like, did any of these chickens have like large talons? And the guy's like, I don't know what the hell you just said to me. Like, it's just, it's so funny. Scene that made me like actually cry laughing today, because I didn't forget that the scene was there, but I forgot like how funny it is, was when they go to the dojo for the free karate lesson, and it's Diedrich Bacher as the sensei, and that's, I don't know, I put it in my letterbox review, but that like line where Kip is like coming up and he's like, bow to your sensei, and he says it like very monotone, and then he just like does like a very like light bow, and then he goes, bow to your sensei, and he like and he just like keeps like fucking like slapping his wrist and slapping him upside the head. It's so like, the comedic timing of it is incredible. And then like just like topping that off with like him saying like, okay, so it'll be 300 a lesson, and then the hard cut of like him like getting dragged by the bicycle like back home. It's so fucking funny. And then the payoff of like Uncle Rico and like his wife is just like so good.
I feel this way, I mean, like, I kind of felt this way about like Mean Girls. I'm not saying that Mean Girls is like an under the radar like cult film or anything, but I feel like a lot of these movies that are like so quotable and like sell like shirts that have quotes on them and stuff like that, like, it's like when you actually watch them, it's like, it's crazy that this is what was like marketable, you know what I mean? Not in like a bad way, but just being like, imagine like hearing all these like lines, and like, I guess this just goes back to like, I don't consider this a cult film, like I consider it like a widely loved film.
It was.
Cult
films aren't parodied. Cult films are not parodied. Like, this one was parodied. Yeah. This was SNL stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
this was, like, there were shirts and Kohl's with quotes from the movie on it. Like, it's crazy. I think my brother's Vote for Pedro shirt, we got at Kohl's, I think.
Definitely. 100%. I think I got mine at Hot Topic, I want to say.
Yeah.
Like, Like, yeah, no, there's no cold. I mean, I guess there are cold classic shirts at like Hot Topic, but there's definitely not a Kohl's. There's Old Navy definitely had them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, these are all like institutions in America that would not have like a real cold classic. a thing there, you know what I mean? So yeah, no, Napoleon Dynamite definitely like broke out. And you know, I always, ever since we did that Meet the Parents episode, I'm always so curious about like the home video sales of movies. I wonder if there's a section about...
there's a new 4K restoration of it as of this year.
Yeah, I think that the tour that I mentioned that John Hader and the crew are currently going on, I think it's to promote the 4K restoration, because I believe that's what they're screening. And I'd love to watch that, because it's already a good looking movie. So I'd be interested to see how it, you know, evolves. Yeah, the home video section doesn't really have any stats as far as that goes. But for anyone that didn't listen to the Meet the Parents episode, we kind of went off about how honestly crazy it was that the home video sales for Meet the Parents, honestly mirrored the actual theatrical box office. Like, there was like Titanic numbers, a blockbuster for that movie. And I can only imagine this was also relatively the same thing, because that's when I found it, that's when a lot of people found it, I feel like, was later that year. I mean clearly 40 million for an indie movie is really impressive in theaters, but I feel like just like the word of mouth of it like really spread for this, is what it seems like. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's so comforting and so fun. I don't know. There's just so many like little bits of it that it's like hard to even like start anywhere with it. I think the most endearing part of the movie is just like his relationship with like Pedro. Because I just like love their little friendship. And I love that like, even when, I forgot the girl's name.
Deb.
You're like, even when she gets like involved with like Pedro, you think it's gonna like cause a rift between them, but it like doesn't. It doesn't ever like feel like it's going in that territory, and it's just like so nice. And I just love their like little dynamic together, and it makes me really happy that he's seeming like still friends with him in real life, because they're on tour together right now with all these screenings. And they, like, every time there's, like, a Q&A or, like, a reunion or something, they're always, like, side by side with each other. And that just makes me so happy. Yeah, and also, like, let me look it up. Whoever plays Pedro. Yeah, Efren Ramirez. Like, he is so good at this movie. He is, like, I don't know. He's just, like, next level funny in this. What else was
he? Yeah. Their grandma is it Mac's mom?
Yeah, so
yeah. I'm always sunny.
Yeah. I was thinking that today, because I was like, I definitely seen her a lot since then. And it is, yeah, he's Mac's mom, or she's Mac's mom. Because Charlie has the normal mom. Yeah.
It's always like very funny to me whenever I rewatch this, and I always forget this, that the grandma is like on like quads, like in like the dunes, like she's like, oh, I'm going out for the weekend, like whatever, and then she's just like off-roading.
I love that shot of her like just going like off the fucking like sand dune and just like flying off of it. There's like certain line readings in this movie that are like always stuck in my head, but it's like one of her very first lines is when she's like telling them that they're going, or she's going to the sand dunes with their aunt, and then Napoleon is like, well, like what are we gonna get to eat? And she's like, I don't know, Napoleon, he eats himself up a goddamn quesadilla. And like, it's and like the choice, because every single person in this movie like mispronounces food names. Like Summer is like chimichanga at every at every turn, which, by the way, do you know who that is?
It's Hailey Duff, right?
Yeah, Hillary Duff.
Yeah.
Which there was like a certain, I think it was like the scene where she's like giving out flyers in the hallway. I really saw it in that shot. I was like, oh yeah, that's Hillary Duff's sister. I don't know.
It's very funny to me, like going back to food. I feel like food is like such a huge thing in this movie.
It is.
I love that the first time we see Kip, it's just like he has, because I love microwave nachos so much. That's like my late night snack.
Yeah.
He has, like, you could barely see the chips. Like, he has, like, a huge block of cheese, a cheese grater, just on the counter next to him while he's on the phone. And then he has a plate, and there's just a pile of shredded cheese, just, like, 6 inches high, like, off the plate with, like, a little bit of tortilla chips.
It's so funny. It is a comically, like, large block of cheese, too. Like, it's so funny. I love the, because, okay, another aspect of this we haven't talked about is, like, yes, it was very popular in the 2000s, but it was also very popular on Tumblr with, like, screen caps and stuff. Because I remember there are so many, like, screen caps of, like, him staring at the plate of nachos, and he's like, I'm busy. And it's... but there's, like, so many, like, scenes from that are, like, screen capped on Tumblr that I feel like... like the are you drinking like 1% milk because you think you're fat? Like, like you don't have to. Like, that's always on Tumblr. Like, God, there's so many like quotable lines, like just all over. And I feel like that helped it like continually have people really underestimate like how influential Tumblr was to like the I don't know, just like the culture and like keeping things in the zeitgeist, you know. Because I feel like a big generation of, like, especially, like, Zillennials were, like, really tapped in and, like, continued to remember movies. Like, I promise Perks of Being a Wallflower wouldn't have its, like, you know, vibe right now. Like, it wouldn't have its, like, reputation if it wasn't for Tumblr.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's also, like, you can't even say Tots without thinking of this movie. Like, anyone... in our generation, like, if you say Tots, like, it's like, Napoleon, give me some of your Tots. Like,
that's such a fucking funny scene. It's so funny. And I was telling Kira before we recorded that, like, this movie made me crave Tots, and that I think I might try to get Sonic tomorrow because of it. But it's so fun. Like, that scene in the classroom where he, like, give me some of your Tots, Napoleon. Like, that guy is only, like, in two scenes, and that line delivery that he does is so funny. And then when he, like, kicks it, he kicks his leg. It's so good. Yeah, like, it makes me hungry for, like, corn dogs and, like, just, like, sandwiches and, like, I never thought I would, like, just crave, like, cafeteria milk cartons, but, like,
yeah,
kind of looks refreshing in this movie. I don't know. Like,
I gotta say, though, like, when I was a kid... I mean, like, still kind of, like, I'm very, like, sensitive to, like mouth noises and stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of this movie is that. And the scene where he's, like, testing the milk, like, at, like, the farm thing, I used to gag at that.
Oh, it's
and
disgusting.
I used to have to, like, close my eyes and look away.
Well, it's already disgusting. And then he, like, swallows it and he's like, yes, the defect on this one is bleach. And they're like, yeah. Great job.
But he opens his mouth a little, and you could, like, see, like, the milk in his mouth. And I used to gag so badly at that. Yeah,
yeah, like, it's, like, a literal, like, the entire frame is, like, his lips and, like, the, the substance, like, getting, like, no, it's gross. It's gross. Like, although I do like in that scene that, like, again, it's another thing that's, like, played for a laugh where it's, like, they get stuck with, like, this shitty job. And he only earns like $6 and change from working there. But then he finds like pride in it, like that he's actually good at it. And same with like Pedro, like that he is somehow good with like cow udders or something, and like can identify like a defect in a cow or something, which is just like funny. Like, it just like everything about it is just like inherently funny. Yeah, there's so many just like little bits like that where I love like. Another like big like laugh for me is like the whole Tupperware section where like Rico and Kip are like trying to like sell not like Tupperware but just like shit around the grandma's like apartment or like house. It's like especially like the boat, and he's like, if you buy like 25 Tupperwares, I'll give you this boat for free. And then it always cracks me up like when he's trying to like get the guy to like break it. And he's just, like, the guy's, like, roll up his shirt. And then the wife, like, just looks, like, visibly, like, depressed that he can't do it. And when Kip is, like, trying to, like, run over, like, the Tupperware, then he actually, like, does, like, break it. He just drives away in the van. It's just so, like, just so many, like, little gags like that are just, like, they're not even, like, meant to be huge laughs. Like, they're just, like, there to be, like, kind of, like, cutaway gags. But they're so fucking funny. And then before you're even done laughing, they've already moved on to another iconic scene. It's honestly, like, it's crazy. It's so crazy. Like, how, on like, just, like, it's strung together by countless iconic scenes.
Yeah, I think also, like, the small details of just, like, I would love to, like, read the screenplay of this, because so many of those scenes are just, like, them, like, vibing. Like, I really would love to know, like, how much, like, improv and stuff there was. Also, like, one scene that I was thinking of in particular that, about, like, improv was, like, the first scene where him and Pedro are, like, on the bike. Like, it was, like, the first day that they met, and he's like, can you go over any ramps in that? And then it cuts to, like, him, like, going over, like, a piece of plywood on, like, bricks in front of their house.
Yeah.
And Pedro, like, goes over it fine. But in that scene, like, I just, like, noticed, like, before he gets on the bike and, like, crashes, I noticed, like, there's, like, so much, like, texture in this movie, and, like, you could see, like, a spider web, like, stuck to his hair, like, blowing in the wind. Oh. And I'm just like, oh, this movie is, like, perfect. It's, like, literally, so like, good. It's so, like, real. And you could see, like, dust in the air a little bit and stuff.
Yeah.
But a scene like that, I'm like, was that just them, like, vibing?
So, sometimes when you, like, point out a fact that a movie is a first feature, that can either be like a positive or it could be derogatory, you know what I mean? Like, because sometimes first features feel like the worst versions of that, but then sometimes first features just have like a ton of passion behind them and so much attention to detail, because a filmmaker can sometimes truly feel like they're never going to have the opportunity again, so they put in everything they have into one picture, no matter like how much of a budget they have or anything. And that's definitely true to Napoleon Dynamite. The guy who made this, Jared Hess, he's had a very weird career since this, because if I'm not mistaken, directly after this he did Nacho Libre with Jack Black, which does have a very distinct style, and I contend is a good movie, but it is, I know, I like that movie. That's a good follow-up, you know. He got another Paramount movie. It's a lot like Napoleon Dynamite, where it feels like it's PG-13, but it's actually PG, because they actually don't do anything that raunchy in it. But then he went on to do The Gentleman Broncos and, like, Masterminds, and he's doing the Minecraft movie next year, which I think is funny. He did a lot of TV, like that Last Man on Earth TV show with Will Forte. Which I watched a little bit of, and it was pretty good. Did you ever see the 6-episode run of Napoleon Dynamite, the TV series?
No, but I was thinking about that during the movie, and I was like, did I imagine that, or was that real?
So, it this was like, if I'm not mistaken, it was 2012 or 2013 when it came out. I want to say 2012, because it was pretty, I was pretty young, or like in my teens when it was happening. And I only watched like the first 2 episodes of it. I didn't really like it. And I remember thinking, like, when it was like picked up by Fox, that I was like, this show would be really interesting if it had like a King of the Hill style, or had like a unique kind of like animation style to kind of like, I don't know, like coincide with the film's visual style.
What did it look like? Let me look up visuals.
It just looked like American Computer, Dad.
Let me get some visuals of this.
It just looked like Bob's Burgers. Not even Bob's Burgers. It looked just kind of like, I don't know, like every Fox comedy animated
series. Oh, yeah. It literally just looks like every animated show.
Yeah. It honestly didn't make any kind of effort to, like, look specific to the movie at all, which I thought was... And the second that I saw the pictures from it, I remember, I was just... Like, I already knew. I gave it the chance, but I just already was kind of like, ah, it's going to be, I feel like I know what this is going to be. The only thing that's positive about that show was that they got the entire cast back. They didn't recast any characters, which did add a lot to it. So, like, when it's actually John Hader, like, doing the voice, And it's like the guy who did play Pedro, even Uncle Rico, and the grandma came back. You know what I mean? Like everyone was there. They even got the dojo guy back, you know? So like that was nice. That was nice. But also I feel like the great thing about the movie is that it establishes the fact that it's a little bit of a heightened aesthetic to the real world, but it does operate in a very real world. Like these are not like, it's not fantastical. It's not, you're not stretching your imagination with anything happening in this film. Animation, you kind of inherently have to do that because mm-hmm. it does get wackier. The first episode of Napoleon Dynamite just completely throws like the naturalism out the window. It's just like immediately just kind of like nonsense. It's like, yeah. Just like American Dad shit. I'm just like, yeah, this isn't Napoleon Dynamite. It's not what made the movie great. So yeah, I stopped watching immediately. And then apparently everyone else, because they literally canceled it 6 episodes in. So
I mean, I feel like bad. Seeing like, what?
As I said, I feel bad because like the whole team was behind it. But yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. What you were saying about like realism, it's like, I feel like seeing like natural landscapes, like, are such a part of this movie.
Yeah.
Like a physical like field is like so huge to like this entire movie.
Yeah, like when like Uncle Rico is like in his camper and there's just like that big like terrain behind him. Also that shot at the end, like his like last shot of the movie when he's like throwing the football and then like that woman like walks up to him, like the like I don't know, the background is just like it's like a sun-kissed sky and I'm like, oh my god. Like, this is beautiful. Like, this is actually gorgeous to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, there's just... Even, like, just, like, simple shots. Like, him on the playground.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with the fucking tetherball or whatever. Like, it's... Like, that last shot's gorgeous. Like, the sunset.
Yeah.
Like, them. It's so...
And that song, too. I love that song so much. Great song. I don't remember what it's called, but it was in the Lisa Frankenstein trailer, too.
Yeah. It's... Yeah. That's
yeah. That's so good. Really just like such a beautiful ending to a movie, just him playing tetherball with Deb, like
it's really sweet. And there's just like so many like little like I don't know moments where it's also like it builds up to that where like, you know, he like wears her keychain and like I don't know, just like he's such a socially awkward guy. And honestly the movie doesn't like excuse himself as like weird behavior, but like he just feels so like real. Like he does feel like that weird kid that you in high school, like, you know what I mean? Like he's just like that weird guy that like maybe the bullies fucked with him, but like mostly no one like really wanted to fuck with him other than that, like, you know what I mean? Like everyone knew that kid and he just plays it so perfectly and very specifically. Like it's not a broad performance, like it's a hyper specific performance. And the movie like never justifies his shitty actions and never even really tries to get you to like sympathize with him. It just like presents him.
Yeah.
And you just kind of root for him regardless of like whatever he does. And by the end with like him and Deb, like you're just kind of like, yeah, hell yeah. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
He's such
without
a player.
Sounding. Yeah. Without sounding too much of like an after school special, like, it's like what you were saying about like it's about like the weird kid that like nobody fucks with. It's like, yeah, that kid has like an inner life and a life outside of school that nobody sees, and like this is a portrayal of that.
Yeah, 100%.
Like this is like the life that people don't see when it's like that weird kid in the corner of the classroom or whatever.
Yeah.
But what you were saying about how they just like present the character to you like without judgment, it's like I also love that there's no exposition at all in this movie. You're just thrown into it. It's just like, okay, he lives with his brother and his grandma. You don't know anything about their family history. You don't know why Kip lives at home. You don't know like anything. They have an Uncle Rico. They don't explain anything. Like, he just shows up one day. Like, there's no exposition about anything that happens, and still anything that happens, you're like, yes, absolutely. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I think the familiarity of it all, like, the texture of it, the, like, I don't know, all that stuff, like, it really does play into, like, why the believability of it, like, works so well, is that I don't know, like, because it feels so lived in, you're just, like, willing to, like, go along for the ride with it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so, like, accessible and, like, open for, like, anyone to just, like, watch and enjoy it. Yeah, I never even thought about that. Like, the fact that you never really find out anything about his parents or, like, anything about that. You just, yeah, you never even question it. I've never questioned it. Like, until now. Now that you brought it up, I'm like, yeah, what about his parents? But I don't even care, honestly. Like,
yeah, I don't want any backstory at all.
No, I don't want any backstory. It's probably a boring answer, if there even is one. Like, I just find it all so insanely funny.
Well, it's like, if they went into backstory, it's like, what? So, like, his parents, like, died or something, and then it's like, now it's a sad movie. Now it's this. Like, this movie is literally just presented to you.
Yeah.
And it is just so, like, you make of it what you do, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's just like charming. Like, there's no, like,
yeah,
I don't, it doesn't have to be anything. Like,
no, I 100% agree with that. I think that's no, that's a great way to put it. I think it's a completely a movie that you just meet on its own terms, and it is barely 90 minutes, and it flies by, and it is just delightful. It has almost like a Lady Bird quality to it, because it feels like so much time passes in 90 minutes, and yet it feels so seamless in the way it's constructed and like strung together, that I think you could like teach a class on like editing with this movie, because I don't know, I love 90-minute movies like Lady Bird in this that just feel like you watched a whole year of a life. But it also, it's just, it happens so quickly. Like, just like, and there's no like real cohesion between the scenes, really. Like, it's just like, here's this, and here's this, and then here's this, and then it's over. And, but that's satisfying, because that can be satisfying if it's well done. And that's just part of the charm of this movie. It's just, it really works. Something I did not realize, because when I watched it today, I don't remember seeing it, was the post-credit scene.
I was going to bring that up.
Because because it cut to credits, and I saw that there was a substantial amount of time left on it. And I was kind of like, is there something after the credits? Because I'm like, this is the, I mean, if it's this much of an indie production, I feel like it wouldn't have this long of credits. So like, I kind of clicked over, and then I saw that there was a scene. And I don't know if I've ever seen the scene.
That's crazy. Like,
surprisingly, because I don't think I ever knew to do that. This is pre-Marvel when this movie came out. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, maybe I have, and I just forgot about it, but I did not remember it the way I remembered everything else about this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like they would sometimes, like, tack it on, like, on top of the credits, like, when it was on cable, like, sometimes. I remember as a kid, like, being, like, really almost, like, annoyed by it. Like, I was like, why is this the only scene in the movie that I really don't like? I was like, this does not fit in with the rest of the movie. And then I found out, I think literally, like, this was, like, before I was even into movies. I knew this fact in my head, like, before I even, like, cared about movies. Excuse me, I keep hiccuping, sorry. They added on the post-credit scene after they got distribution, because they got like more budget to film another scene, so it doesn't fit in with the rest of the movie, because that's the only scene in the movie that like actually has like a budget.
You can tell. I mean, even so, like the vista behind them, it's just like, it's beautiful to look at, and like also just like all the like I don't know, like the costume design in that scene is like really impressive, and it is a pretty funny scene. Like the like LaFonda's brother, like just like bowing his head in like shame, like when he sees Kip, and it's just like there are like some really funny moments, and like but also like that's another like dynamic, like his and her like relationship, like it's so like sweet and like it's nice, and like that like I love how like into her he is, like it's so like like I love that scene where like they start hanging out for the first time, and he just like he sees Napoleon, and he's like, she's the best thing that's ever happened to me, and it's like it's so sweet. Yeah, I love that about it. Which, by the way, this is his only acting credit, that guy.
Really?
Yeah, from what I understand. I clicked on it earlier. Maybe I misread it, but I'm pretty sure. Let me look now. Yeah, Aaron Rule. He Okay, no, I was a little bit wrong about that, but he hasn't done much. He's only done this. He was in a short film called, I'm not going to name it. These are all like, these are just like other like indie movies that came out like within the vicinity of it. But this was like, the last movie he started was in 2007, and it was a movie nobody saw. Like another Sundance movie. And then he returned to voice the character in 2012 with the show.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, that's it. He hasn't done anything professionally since then. Apparently, he's directed a lot of commercials for T-Mobile, Nintendo, Coke, and Burger King.
Interesting.
Yeah. But he stopped in 2012, it seems.
Mm.
So who knows what he's doing now. But yeah, it's pretty...
Like, Kip's relationship with LaFonda, like... I feel like what you were saying, like, about him, like, at the, like, in the post-credit scene, when he was, like, singing, I feel like that's the only time in the movie that LaFonda's, like, she seems almost, like, embarrassed of him. Right. And I feel like that does not fit in with the rest of the movie. And also, it's very weird to me that it's, like, a lot of like outside characters that you don't see in the rest of the movie, and I feel like this is a very like contained movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like this scene at all.
I don't like it.
I
didn't take it so much that she was embarrassed by him. I just thought that like the brother, it seemed, was for some reason.
She was like making like it would like cut to like a reaction shot to her, and she was just like like very like. I don't know. It just didn't feel in tone with the rest of the movie at all.
I don't know. I liked it. But it does feel like that is one thing about it, because I don't like dislike it as much as you do. But there's like one thing like with like Napoleon getting the horse.
Mm-hmm.
It does kind of like teeter into like the same issue that I, you know, said about the animated show, which is where it doesn't have like that often, like this authentic kind of like feel to it, where. Because, like, really, would Napoleon ride, go get a horse, like, that far away and, like,
he would fall off the horse, and the horse would run away, and then he'd have to walk there.
Yeah, it feels a little too funny. It does. Like, it feels a little, like, I don't entirely dislike it. I think it's cute, but, like, it's, yeah, there is, like, a little bit up to it where it's pushing it a bit. But also, like, if you're gonna get that budget, like, why put a post-credit scene? Like, just make that the actual ending at that point.
Mm.
Not that I'm actually upset about that, because I think the actual ending is great, but if you're gonna do it, like, I'm kind of wondering why they didn't just add it in there.
Mm-hmm.
But although I will say I do like the fact that farm guy, like the farmer, is like the priest.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was funny, because every like line delivery that he has is like so funny. I don't know. Otherwise, I think this is pretty much a perfect movie. Like, I don't really have any notes with it. And the thing is, it's one of those movies where I feel like we recited so many of the iconic moments from it, but it's still probably not even scratching the surface of like the funniest parts of it, the funniest, like, the most memorable parts of it, the things that people associate with it. Like, you could go frame by frame with this movie and you still probably wouldn't crack, you know, what it means to people, because this movie, it means a lot to people. And I don't know. There's a lot to say about it. So you can go in circles about it, but you know, you're never going to cover the whole picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love how normal everybody looks. I'm so tired of seeing like perfect people in movies. I really am. I think casting needs to learn a few things. Like, casting departments in general need to like learn a few things from movies like this, because
yeah.
Nobody looks normal anymore, and everyone in this movie looks like a real person.
That's that is one thing I'll say, is that like everyone looks like exceedingly normal and just like not completely like put together. Like, they just like look like they are in a normal school day or work day in like the Midwest, and this movie like nails like sweaty school energy perfectly. Like, I can't even describe why, but just like being in a fucking hot ass classroom with the like AC wall unit running and being loud as fuck while you're trying not to sweat your ass off in a class, like, it nails that like vibe and tone. Like, just like the, like, I don't know, there's like, if you've been to a sweaty school, you just know what the fuck I'm talking about. Like, this movie just nails that. And like, very weird compliment, but like the jock guy that's like boyfriend of Summer, every time, like, there's something about him that makes me laugh, because like he doesn't have like any lines in the movie. He just like scoffs at everything, and it's like the funniest thing ever every time he does it. Like, he's just like, especially like when he's getting like Napoleon like wound up at the beginning, he's like, Napoleon, what did you do this summer? And he like tells him about the Wolverines and like having to shoot him, and he's just like scoffing the entire time, and he's like, oh. And like, especially like when he's like doing the dance at the end, he's just like scoffing the entire time, and he's like perplexed when they break out into applause. Yeah, I don't know, it's just,
yeah,
so many little...
no, like, yeah, there's a school bully, but there are no real like antagonists in this movie at all.
Yeah, I mean, even like Summer is like, you know, most movies, I mean, even though she's like running against Pedro, like, she's not like a bitch to him or anything, you know what I mean? She's like, I mean, she's kind of like up her own ass a little bit, but like, she's not like nefarious. If anything, Pedro's the one that goes out of line, you know, with the pinata. You know, like, she doesn't really do anything to him. You know what I mean? Like, even like when Pedro wins and stuff, like, it's just like, I don't know, it's just like, it's funny, like, everything you think this movie's gonna do, it doesn't do. Like, even like the girl that like stands up Napoleon, or not even stands him up, but like just like ditches him at the prom, like, she's not even like portrayed as like an asshole or anything. It's just kind of,
she,
like,
just wants to hang out with her friends.
Yeah, she just wants to hang out with her friends, because like, why the fuck would she want to be with Napoleon? Like, oh my god, that line fucking kills me, is when she's like on the phone with him, and he's like, she's like, because the mom like reminds her, and she's like, oh yeah, I wanted to compliment the picture you drew me, it's really nice. And he's like yeah, it took me like 5 hours to draw your upper lip. And she's like, thanks. It's just so, it's so funny.
I can't remember if it's like the first line of the movie, because like, I remember the opening credits, obviously, like how it starts, but I think it's like the perfect statement for the movie, when there's just like the kid on the bus, and it's like, what are you gonna do today, Napoleon? He's like, whatever I want to do, God. I feel like that's just like the statement of the movie.
Yeah, so funny. Yeah. Yeah, that's something that was definitely quoted a lot. Whatever, I feel like, gosh. Like, there's like, for some reason as a kid, my favorite line, and don't ask me why, I don't know why, it's a very like throwaway line, but it's when Deb is at like the door for the first time selling the like keychains and stuff. And she's like, I'm trying to like raise money to go to college. And then Kip inside is just like, your mom went to college. And then he like, and then it cuts to him, and he just like smirks to himself, like he's so proud of himself for making this speech. And like, it, for some reason, I quote that like all the time, or I did like in high school, middle school, and like no one understood that that was from Napoleon Dynamite. But to me, that's like one of the funniest lines of the movie, because it's so like quick.
It's just like a throwaway line, like, but it feels so real. It's very funny.
And like the way, like, she just like, it fucking kills her. Like, she just like runs away. yeah. Oh my god, it's so funny. I kind of already want to watch it again. Honestly. Yeah.
I was literally considering like making my friends watch it at some point in the next few weeks.
I will say, the last thing I'll bring up as far as like specific jokes go, when he gets that like dance instruction video from the store, and he puts it in like the VHS player, and it's like, are you ready to learn cool dance moves? And then he closes the door, and you just hear him go, yes. Like, it's just, it's so funny. Like, I was cracking up today. I was just like, I was like eating dinner and just like laughing like a madman watching this stupid movie. Like, it was, it was just like 2004 all over again. I don't know what to say. Like, I'm right back where it was. Like, nothing's really changed.
Yeah.
I'm just a guy who likes Napoleon Dynamite at the end of the day.
Yeah. So real.
So real. yeah, I don't know. Perfect movie. Although, this is one of the rare good movies where we do have a lot to talk about. So that's nice.
Because it's, like, great filmmaking. And funny. And we have a lot of memories of it.
Yeah, and it's PG. Like, it's only a PG rated movie. I don't Did this movie have, like, ads on Nickelodeon? It feels like it would have, but, like...
Maybe.
I don't know. I feel like it definitely...
It's Paramount and MTV, so it would be... I know it's, like, 20th Century Fox,
maybe,
but...
more like Nick at Night, maybe.
I feel like I remember seeing something regarding Nickelodeon with this movie. Okay.
Maybe.
It
does
have a very Nickelodeon vibe.
I mean, I can't stress it enough. It was only a PG movie, so they totally could have got away with it. And honestly, it's not really that suggestive. I mean, my only thing is, I say the same thing, like, when I bring up, like, kids watching, like, Isle of Dogs or something. Like, I just don't know how much they would take away from it. But there's nothing in this that I'd be, like, afraid to show them. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. Like, kids quoting this movie is, like, literally... Yeah. Our childhood, like,
yeah, 100%. It's just, I mean, I do, God, we say it all the time, but I do wonder how, like, kids today would react to it, like, if they'd be down for, like, the deliberate, like, style of it and, like, the pacing of it. But yeah, there's something about it, 2004, it just hit.
I love how I'm always like, oh, kids today, and I'm like, well, my little brother, he's literally turning 21, but he was 1 year old when this came out.
Wow.
And he loved, like, I mean, not when he was 1 year old, but, like, right, when he was, like, 8, 10, I don't know. He, like, loved this movie. It was so funny.
It is a very easy movie to like. It's very, I don't know. It's very, very nice. Like, I don't know. It's just, like, very pleasant. I will say our king, Roger Ebert, gave us a 1.5 out of 4.
Oh, no. The only bad review he's ever given a Z-Canon movie.
He said the movie makes no attempt to make Napoleon likable, and that it contained a kind of studied stupidity that sometimes passes as humor. That's the thing about Roger Ebert, is that I love him, and I'll always respect him, and I'm so glad we had him, but there are just times where I do not fuck with his opinion. Like, there are just times where I do not understand it. Yeah, I was, like, reading through the rest of the Wikipedia. The only other interesting thing I could say is that there's, like, a legacy section where it says that, like, this movie did spawn the quote-unquote Napoleon Dynamite problem, where a lot of, like, Sundance movies afterwards had, like, a similar Midwest small-town vibe, like Little Miss Sunshine and Juno and stuff. Although I wouldn't say those are entirely similar.
That's very funny, because the reason why I have this movie on DVD is because I went to my local Sam's Club in 2014 and got a 20th Century Fox or Fox Searchlight box set of Juno, Little Miss Sunshine, and Napoleon Dynamite on TV.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I have one of those. It's like the Tree of Life and, like, Pieces of the Southern Wild or something. I don't know. Yeah. It's something like that.
It was $10 for all three of those. How could I go wrong?
That's a great deal. Those are three amazing movies. So that's that's a steal. I don't know. I think that's kind of stretching it as far as, like, calling it a problem, because I don't think those movies are really comparable, other than just being, like, character-focused stories that are outside of, like, a major city. Like, I don't really see the connection otherwise.
It's also, like, it's showing, like, a different part of the country that people usually consider, like, quote-unquote, like, flyover states or, like, boring or whatever. Like, it's, like...
Yeah.
Middle-class lives that people usually don't pay attention to, and that movies didn't really pay attention to.
And, like, isn't that, like, part of, like, why cinema is, like, I don't know, valuable and, like, interesting, is to, like, I don't know, show different perspectives?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, that's just me, but, like, so I think that's kind of, I mean, I know I'm, like, literally just reading, I'm, like, starting beef with, like, some random Wikipedia segment, but whatever. Like, I mean, That's on me, I guess, but, like, whatever. I just, like, read it, and I'm like, shut the fuck up. Like, there's no issue here.
Listen, if anything, Napoleon Dynamite has only been a good impact on cinema history, like, and all of our lives in general.
I mean, like I said at the beginning, it's crazy that this is, for, like, a lot of us, was collectively our first independent movie. Mm-hmm. But we didn't even know it. We didn't know what the concept of, like, an independent movie was back in the day. Mm-hmm. Like, we just consumed it because it hit the mainstream, but... Yeah, we saw, like, a $400,000 Sundance original, and we didn't even know it at the time. So
it was just fed to us on Comedy Central and maybe Nickelodeon, maybe?
I don't know if it was on Nickelodeon, like, as an actual movie. I think there were definitely TV spots, but I don't know. I mean, I couldn't tell you what. I don't know if I ever watched this on cable, honestly. You know,
let me fact check this.
I may have watched it, and I don't know if this is a false memory. Adult Swim may have had it at some point. Mm-hmm. I feel like, did TBS ever have it? No. I don't know if they would have, because that's not, because Paramount's pretty stingy with their stuff.
Oh my god. I forgot about this.
What?
Jared Hess was supposed to do a Nicktoons movie.
Yeah, okay. I was, like, looking at this.
I fucking forgot about that. It was supposed to be, like, Roger Rabbit, but it was Nicktoons.
Yeah, apparently, there's, like, a lot of, like, reasons why they couldn't do it, apparently. Mm-hmm. Like, apparently, like, they didn't want, like, Ren and Stimpy in the movie, and he was fighting that, and, like, Doug, they had, like, a rights issue with Doug and Disney. But a big thing was, like, when Steven Hillenburg was still alive, he was pretty persistent that SpongeBob shouldn't be crossed over
with
other Nicktoons. So, like, I think there were, like, a lot of things going on against that. But, yeah, I remember when that, like, I remember, like, where I was when I heard that news that he was directing a Nicktoons movie. And I, like, remember, like, reading the log line of it, because it was exactly what you said. It was, like, described as, like, Roger Rabbit meets, like, the Nicktoons. And I remember thinking, like, that's, like, my movie. Like, that's, like, the movie of my lifetime, if that happens. That's, like, a movie that, like, if I could pick, like, 5 canceled projects, that's, like, at the top of the list, I think.
To, like, see.
Because that's, like, fascinating. Like, what the hell does that even look like? Like, that's,
yeah.
I mean, like, do you go, like, all the way back? Like, do you go, like, how far back do you go? And, like, do you bring in the Fairly Odd Parents? Do you bring in Jimmy Neutron? Like, come on.
Yeah. Back at the Barnyard.
You're back. Oh, fuck. Come on, don't get me started. Back to Barnyard.
Yeah, I mean, when I was looking up, like, Nickelodeon, Napoleon Dynamite, that's all that came up. But I feel like I keep seeing people say that this should be in the Criterion Collection, and I'm almost, like, upset that there's a new 4K restoration, because I feel like this should be in the Criterion Collection.
Although, I will say, Criterion's getting, like, less and less picky with, like, its prestige.
Yeah.
Like, stuff. So I think that that could still easily happen. That artwork would go hard for it. I already know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
Or they would, like, take the easy way out and just make it, like, the drawing that he made of Summer or whatever, and just be like,
You can never tell with them. It's one or the other. It's, like, either the best you've ever seen or the, like, most simple thing you've ever seen.
I mean, I feel like people say it all the time, like, we need a super bad Criterion.
I would give so much money for that. It's not funny. Like, it's so I was looking at my Before Sunrise collection the other day, and it's, like, the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, like, the box set of that. It's like, we used to be a proper country.
Like, not literally, like,
I got
used to be a proper country. Movies like Napoleon Dynamite used to make $400 million or $40 million.
I got Victoria, the WALL-E one, and it looks really, it's pretty cool. It has, like, that the company's logo on it. I forgot the name of the company in the movie, but yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I wish Jared Hess would make something cool again. Although, to be fair to him, I haven't seen a lot of his recent stuff. So maybe it is, like, good and I just didn't see it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I'm just assuming about this. But, yeah, either way, they made, like, one of the best comedies of all time. One of the most influential, like, American films of the 21st
century. I would say so, unironically.
Yeah, honestly, it is. And it's funny that it's millennial. Like, I feel like a lot of, like, iconic movies are not really millennial, but this one, like, is, like, at least to this degree, I mean, like, of iconic, like, I don't know. It just kind of finds that threshold where it's timeless and it doesn't cater to any specific audience. It's kind of just for everybody if you're willing to accept it. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yep.
Yeah. Is there anything else to say about Napoleon Dynamite?
It's perfect.
Yeah, and I'm craving tater tots. Actually, the last thing I'll say, I was looking at the, like, home media section. Aside from the DVD and stuff, they had a PSP game for this movie, Nintendo Switch game, or Nintendo.
Wait, really?
Yeah, we're a parent. It was like a, almost like a Wii Sports, but it was like you just like you have to like feed Tina and you have to like do dance moves with him and stuff. And it's like you have to like drive Uncle Rico's van and like throw the football and like a whole bunch of like random shit. Yeah. And it had like terrible reviews, but one like I think like IGN gave it a 7 for committing to the aesthetic of the movie.
Okay, we gotta play that.
Yeah, I gotta. You know, Victoria just pulled out her old DS the other day, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe I should order it on eBay and just like plug it into her DS and.
We gotta do like a let's play of it.
Let's play. Yeah, she's been playing Nintendogs a lot here lately, and I kind of wanna. And then Eddie Burback just did a video about Nintendogs the other day, and I'm kind of like,
wait, really?
Oh yeah, he went off on it. It was a great video. But yeah.
I literally just charged my DS like last week to play Nintendogs, and I haven't picked it up because I know that the second I pick it up, I'm not going to be able to do anything else.
It's funny because I was like sitting on the couch with Victoria the other day, and I was like, I forgot what I was doing, but then like I don't know, I just hear her go sit, and like, at, like what the fuck are you doing? but yeah, I'm afraid to like because. The last time I like impulsively bought a video game on eBay, mm-hmm. I bought a GameCube and Dizzy's Extreme Skate Adventure for like $75 in a bundle, and it literally consumed my summer of my entire summer of 2019. Like every like week, I would like play that for at least a day straight.
Yeah,
just like skating around like Pride Rock or Andy's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Like I shredded. Like as Buzz Lightyear, okay? Like I went up the Hot Wheel ramp. I went around the little green men. Like, you know, I was in toys or in like Andy's bedroom, like just shredding shit, man. So I'm afraid that if I bite the bullet and like buy a DS on eBay and I like, I don't know. I feel like I'll never stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe the Patreon subscribers can hook us up with a, I don't know, copy of Napoleon Dynamite, either on PSP or Nintendo DS. I'm not picky. Either or.
Yeah. We'll make a Twitch account.
Yeah. Live stream the Napoleon Dynamite gameplay. all right. Well, you guys can follow me on Twitter, Adam_NotSandler, letterboxed. Let me see. My website, cinesoup.com. I just saw Dune 2 last week. By the time this episode posts, Dune 2 will be out. But mm-hmm. I did do a review for that. It's fantastic. It's like one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. So definitely watch the movie, read my review. I'll have other reviews coming out as more movies. It's been kind of a slow year so far, but you know, I don't know. So there's some cool stuff coming out soon, so I'll definitely be reviewing it. And yeah, me and my friend Murphy, we started another podcast called Prestige Content, and we're doing that. You can find, you know, Spotify, Apple, literally any platform that you can use to find stuff on. We did, to Kira's dismay, do a Madame Web episode where I was not exactly, you know, kind to it.
But I won't be listening to that. I'm very sorry.
It's okay. You know, it... What was that line in the movie where she's like looking at her dead mom and she's like, I didn't have a muscular disorder, mom. I didn't actually have a muscular disorder.
And no, she said, but I don't have a muscular disorder or something like that.
It's so stupid.
I can't listen to people be mad about that movie anymore.
I'm not mad about it. I'm just.
No, I know. But like, I feel like everybody's, this is just going to be like the last episode, maybe when I like went off about Argyle, but I'm just people are so angry about that movie, and I'm just like, it's a movie. Like, did you ever see that like clip of Britney Spears when she's like, it's a movie, it's not real? Like, that's literally how I feel every single time anybody talks about Madame Web. Like, I promise you that's not the worst movie you've ever seen in your life. I promise you that's not the worst movie in the past 5 years. I promise you it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay, okay?
It's not the worst movie I've seen. It's pretty, I mean, it's at least like the worst edited movie I've seen in like 5 years.
Oh,
I,
yeah, there were definitely like so many technical things wrong with that movie, but like I was entertained. I don't care.
No,
I
thought fair
it was,
enough.
No, I thought it was, the thing that made me really mad was people going there opening night with the intention of heckling it. Because there was, like, families in the theater that, like, they don't know that this movie's a meme. Like, at least wait until, like, a week into the run or something.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know that this movie's a meme. And, like, they're there with, like, their daughters who are like, I like Sydney Sweeney. Like, I'm going to see this movie. They're probably enjoying themselves. Like, they're, like, just normal people watching a movie. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah.
And, like, you can't even hear the people talking in the movie because it's, like, a bunch of, like, boys being like, oh, what is, like, what the fuck, like, it gets me so mad. It's like, shut up. You know, see, what I mean, like,
see, this is why I went to the drive-in, so I could heckle it in the comfort of my car.
Yeah, sure, valid, whatever. Like, just it just comes down to like whatever the fuck you think about a movie, like, just don't be an asshole to other people. And that's not even me being defensive about like Madame Web. It's about me. It's about me being like, don't interrupt other people's experience. Like, it doesn't matter the quality of the movie. Like, you're being disrespectful to the people around you. You know what I mean?
I can agree with that. I can agree with that. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. Even Madame Web, I can agree with that.
Yeah. Like, we were having a talk before we started recording about like talking and texting during a movie. It's like, everybody just sit down, shut the fuck up, and watch a movie. Like, no, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad.
I agree, because I've been to so many like indie movies that old people didn't jive with, and they made it very clear that they were not having a good time.
Old,
like,
people mid-movie. Are the fucking worst at the movies.
Yeah, they're terrible. I remember when I saw like a Ghost Story, this guy was just like audibly angry at the movie as it was happening, and then this guy like behind me just went, then leave.
Good.
he did.
I was texting my friend because I tweeted about it, but I was like, oh my god, like literally the night before I went to the Les Mis re-release, I was like, oh my god, I really hope like that there aren't like theater kids there singing along. And luckily that did not happen. It was a mixed audience of old people, young people that were very respectful. But my friend texted me, and it remind like about like seeing musical movies in theaters and like theater kids. And when I went to go see West Side Story, like the Spielberg one, it was like a packed audience, and there was like a group of like theater kids like in the front that just would not shut up. Like, they were like laughing and like just being so loud. And this like middle-aged man literally stood up and he was like, shut up, we are trying to watch a movie here. And the kids just, and he like sat back down immediately, and the kids were just like so like shocked, they just walked out.
Good.
Yeah,
leave.
Yeah,
so if you happen to be a theater talker listening to this, shut the fuck up.
Exactly.
Shut your ass up.
Shut the fuck up.
Where can everyone find you on Kira?
At Garlic Emoji. On Twitter.
Shushing people at the theater.
Yeah, telling people, excuse me, can you please stop talking? It's very distracting. Or if you're going to be on your phone, can you at least turn the brightness down a little bit? Because it's very distracting. That's my go-to. You can follow me on Twitter at Garlic Emoji. You can follow us on Twitter at Zillennial Canon, on Instagram at TheZillennial Canon. Give us some ratings, some reviews, and watch Napoleon Dynamite, because you'll have a great time.
It's a great movie. Perfect movie. Holds up. Yep. And we'll be back next week with something. Who knows what?
We don't know yet.
Bye, guys.
Bye.